America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. No constraints on U.S. weapons sent to Israel.
We continue to advocate that humanitarian laws, the law of armed conflict, are always upheld. We are not putting any limits on how Israel uses weapons that is provided.
Israel expands its ground incursion into Gaza. Guinea's anti-corruption court bans accountants from traveling outside the country. A Liberian Nobel Peace Laureate says some Liberian political leaders during this year's electoral season have been behaving like what she calls clever devils. King Charles of the United Kingdom begins a four-day visit to Kenya today, Tuesday.
Colonialism had its own issues. As a country, we also have decorum in welcoming our guests. So the welcome will be very cordial and very nice and very good.
And Malian artists decried the suspension of French cultural exchange. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. deliveries of weapons and ammunition are arriving in Israel on a near daily basis, and as Israeli ground forces intensify their attack on Hamas militants in the Gaza Strip, there are questions about how the weapons are being used. More from VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden at the Pentagon.
The aftermath of an Israeli airstrike in Gaza, Palestinians trying to pull a woman from the rubble. As the Hamas-run health ministry says, more than 8,300 people have been killed. Half a world away, at the Pentagon, U.S. defense officials insist they've made clear to their Israeli counterparts how U.S.-made weapons should be used.
We continue to advocate that humanitarian laws, the law of armed conflict, are always upheld.
Still, Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh says the U.S. is also giving Israel free rein.
We are not putting any limits on how Israel uses weapons that is provided.
She says a big reason for that.
We have to remember that Hamas is the one that is putting civilians in harm's way and using them as human shields.
Jeff Selden, VOA News, the Pentagon.
Israel is expanding its ground incursion into Gaza and said on Monday it killed dozens of Hamas terrorists overnight. The incursion comes as the humanitarian crisis in Gaza is worsening. Linda Grastin reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israeli tanks and troops pushed further into the northern Gaza Strip overnight Sunday, reaching the outskirts of densely populated Gaza City as Israel continued its unrelenting airstrikes on Gaza. Israel said it killed dozens of Hamas terrorists who had barricaded themselves inside buildings. Israeli military chief of staff Herzi Halevi met troops on the front line.
אנחנו במלחמה, אתם מבינים את זה מהיום הראשון. זה יהיה תהליך ארוך, ואנחנו עכשיו בשלב שאנחנו פוגעים חזק באויב גם בפנים, בכניסה לתוך רצועת עזה.
The expanded Israeli incursion came amid a growing humanitarian crisis in the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Health Ministry said the death toll since the Israeli airstrikes began more than 3 weeks ago passed 8,300, more than half of them women and children. Officials from humanitarian organizations say that Israel must allow more aid into Gaza. Karim Ahmed Khan is the chief prosecutor of the ICC.
There should not be any impediment to humanitarian relief supplies going to children, to women and men, civilians. They are innocent. They have rights under international humanitarian law. These rights are part of customary international law. These rights are part of the Geneva Conventions.
Israel says that it is allowing humanitarian aid into southern Gaza, where it has warned more than a million Palestinians to flee to. Meanwhile, the Israeli army says that Hamas is diverting aid and fuel and using hospitals as command centers instead of safe zones for civilians. Daniel Hagari is the chief Israeli army spokesman.
Hamas has turned hospitals into command and control centers and hideouts for Hamas terrorists and commanders. Additionally, I can confirm that according to the intelligence we have in our hands, there is fuel in hospitals in Gaza.
While most Israelis support the ground incursion and the state's goals of eradicating Hamas, the families of the more than 230 Israelis taken hostage worry that the ground invasion could endanger the hostages. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant met with the families and assured them that increased military pressure on Hamas was the only chance for getting the hostages released. But the son of Canadian-Israeli peace activist Vivian Silver, believed to be a hostage in Gaza, disagrees with this approach.
Soldiers are not surgeons. They can't save one person from I don't think it works like that. War is chaotic. And also from the side of Hamas, that they took the prisoners as leverage. And if they lose that leverage, then they don't have use for them anymore. So it seems to be to me that she is more at risk.
Israeli officials say they expect the war in Gaza to continue for several months. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
King Charles of England begins a four-day visit to Kenya today, Tuesday, at the invitation of President William Ruto. This will be the monarch's first visit to a Commonwealth nation as king. It was in Kenya that King Charles's late mother, Queen Elizabeth II, acceded to the throne in 1952. Officials said the visit will celebrate the warm relationship between the two countries. However, it comes as some Kenyans are demanding an apology and reparations for ill treatment during British colonial rule. Wade Ambrose is a Kenyan lawyer and political analyst. He tells me that King Charles will receive a warm welcome because there is more positive in the relationship between the two countries than negative.
Being members of the Commonwealth, having been part of the British, so we feel privileged that he's coming to visit this country, the first country in Africa. It gives us prominence in the globe and it boosts our tourism and many other things. So he's highly welcome.
But Kenya was once colonized by Britain, and are you saying that everything is fine?
There's nowhere in the world where everything is fine. We are talking about currently Kenya was colonized by British. There are bad things they did, there are good things they did, and now we are engaged in nation building. We want to build our country to be a first world. So we concentrate more on the opportunities we can capitalize on to build the country, as opposed to going into the nitty-gritty of some of the details that are part of colonialism.
Well, it was in Kenya that the king's mother, Queen Elizabeth, who passed away now, she learned that she became a queen.
Yes, she was here when the father died and she became queen. She was young. She was on holiday in Nanyuki, in one of the places, tourist attractions. And therefore, we have a long checkered history with the royal family, other than harping on the colonialism part. Kenya and Britain has had very good relations, very unique history together, and some occurrences that increases the uniqueness. So we are looking at it and we're saying, let's move forward. And Kenya has been special in the list of the British hegemony. I can say that I remember in 2007, we had a political turmoil, and our friends, the British and the USA, came in very quickly, and we were able to nip in the bud what would have brought the country to an ungovernable, chaotic situation. So it's a special friendship that, to me, I'm seeing.
What do you say to some Kenyans who would say, well, the British did some wrong to the Kenyans? For example, during the independence struggle, the Mau Mau movement, and there are some who are demanding perhaps there should be some reparations.
Yes, colonialism had its own issues, and very many bad things took place. And whatever some people are asking for, they have a justification for it, they have a basis to follow it up, and we have no problem with that. We are only saying also in the history as a country, we also have decorum in welcoming a guest. So they'll put their demands, they'll put what they think is there, but the welcome will be very cordial and very nice. So those demands, those issues, they'll not be the first on the table. The first on the table will be current events, current issues, our vision for the country, where we want to go. If along the way there are reparations, we will say hallelujah.
Well, thank you so much for your viewpoint.
Thank you.
Wade Ambrose is a Kenyan lawyer and political analyst. He was speaking with us from Nairobi. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 31st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Liberian Nobel Peace Laureate Lema Bowie says some Liberian political leaders during this year's electoral season have been behaving like what she calls clever devils. She says a clever devil is an individual who, although educated, lacks character and practices politics without principles. Bowie won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2011 alongside then-President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf for helping to end Liberia's long civil war. Her observation comes as losing candidates in the first round of Liberia's October 10 election have been endorsing either President George Weah or former Vice President Joseph Boakai, the two candidates in the runoff on November 11. Bowie tells me some of the politicians lack character, integrity, and truth in their conversations and interactions, and she fears for Liberian youth who idolize them.
Well, if you look at the definition of clever devils that I quoted from the chief imam of Liberia, Chief Imam Kyari, he said clever devils is basically when people have education without character, it creates clever devils. Look around our country today, James. See what we have. One minute, Peter is saying, oh, this is what is good. The next minute, we're flip-flopping. And the rest of the population sitting and watching and seeing all these super leaders. And I put the leaders in quotes because true leaders would never do some of the things that we're seeing. No integrity. Truth is far from everything. Like someone said, if I have to walk over my mother to get to where I need to get to, I would do that. No compassion for the ordinary people. It's just really sad. Not just sad. For me personally, it's disgusting and sickening to watch.
But Lema, you said politics without principles. Isn't that the mere definition of the word itself, politics?
Well, it's true, but I don't think we should continue to think that politics should be dirty. Politics should be without character, integrity, without truth. I mean, when we talk about politics, it's to establish an order where everyone can at least find dignity in their life. And I'm not saying in different parts of the world that it is clean, but in our part of the world, it's just disgusting. I mean, it's just very, very sad, Mr. Bode, when you think about the way Liberians have been tossed back and forth here, there, and everywhere. Like, the people would say strange bedfellows. One minute we are friends, the next minute we're enemies. And so who do you believe? What do you believe? What are those values that people are putting out there? Where are your principles? Politics is not about losing yourself, you know?
The behavior that you identified here, can we say that this is symptomatic of the economy of the country where people will go with anything that satisfies their economic needs?
Yes, economy plays a role, but education plays a major role. And I think most times, I definitely believe that our leaders keep people in these ratchet, poor conditions because they want to exploit it in times like this. And I think it is time for us to begin to educate the young people, the general public, our future generation, that voting is just one day, and the rest of the time we live with the consequences of our vote. And I think education, civic voters' education, plays a major role, and those are things that we need to invest in as a people.
So before I let you go, Alema, as you can see, there is a parade of endorsers. People are endorsing either President George Weah or former Vice President Joseph Boakai. What is your take, and do you plan to make any endorsement?
Well, fortunately for me, where I stand in Liberia is I've always stood for the truth, stood for integrity, and for many other things. I've been constant in my advocacy. From 2005 till date, I've never gone public with any endorsement, and I will remain in that space. Having said that, doesn't mean that I will not vote. But when it comes to the whole situation of Liberians and where to vote, we've experienced 6 years of President Weah. Every Liberian know what the 6 years have been. Every Liberian know what their aspiration for their lives is, what they want for their children, what they want for their future. The question to every Liberian is, what do you see? What are your aspirations? What have you experienced in 6 years? And what do you want for yourself and for your family. My thing is, vote your conscience. Vote for what you experience. And that would be my pitch to the Liberian people.
Lema Boy, thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
You're welcome, Mr. Boate.
Liberian Nobel Peace Laureate Lema Boy was speaking with us from New York. Guinea's anti-corruption court prosecutor has banned over 30 accountants from traveling outside the country. The prime minister also announced on state television the withdrawal of diplomatic and service passports from all ministers and top civil servants. This is taking place at a time when the government is going through turbulent financial difficulties. Reporter Karim Kamara has details from Conakry.
No reason was given by the prosecutor at the anti-corruption court for banning all of the 34 accountants from traveling outside Guinea. The accountants are from 34 government ministries. They were asked by the prosecutor to surrender their passport just after they came out of an all-night-long meeting with junta leader Mamadi Doumbouya on how funds are allocated to the different ministries we have been managed. The prosecutor is here to give reasons behind the travel ban, but it is clear that the financial directors in the administration are suspected of widespread financial mismanagement. Even though many have applauded the action by the prosecutor as a step forward in the fight against corruption in Guinea, they have warned that any indictment must include due process under the law. Economist Musa Bangura says it is normal for all accountants to provide reports of their management according to legal guidelines. He says when you are heading or involved in a financial sector ministry, it's for all Guineans and you can be questioned at any time. He says if there's any doubt, it is normal to prohibit them from traveling outside the country and the ban must be done within the law. Proof of wrongdoing must be provided. He says the anti-corruption court is not only for former government members, but it is for everybody. Therefore, if the accountant have been banned from travel, it's likely that there is something wrong. Members of the civil society described the action by the prosecutor as too late and warned that ministers who are issuing the orders must be investigated as well. Molai Bangura is a member of civil society, has called for the investigations to be deepened and that the accountant must not be the only suspect. He says it is a late wake-up call and comes about 2 years since the junta seized power. He says there have been lots of alerts but actions was not taken. He says in economic management, the accountant has his role and as well as the boss. He says if today the accountant have been questioned, how about the ministers who give orders? He says it is a good start, but investigations must go deep. And as a member of civil society, he wants the legal process to be respected. The opposition says the real culprit have been left out, accusing ministers and directors of corruption. Bailo Bari is a member of the opposition. He says those who are ruling us today are asked to declare their assets to the public, but they have refused. He says some ministers and directors have become millionaires, with the media denouncing the number of houses the ministers are buying. The prime minister has also urged ministers and all top civil servants to surrender their passport, which he says could help the government properly scrutinize their trips abroad. The travel ban imposed on the accountant comes at a time when the Guinean government has an acute shortage of cash to run the country. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
Adiara Traore was due to travel to France with an international dance troupe before France suspended visa services in Mali and the French Ministry of Culture asked the country's artistic union to suspend cooperation with artists from Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. Amid tensions between France and the Sahelian juntas, Malian artists and their supporters are asking Paris to allow artists to continue the cultural exchange that has flourished between Mali and France for years. Annie Reisenberg reports.
Every year since 2014, Adiara Traore has toured France with her dance group, Amala Gianor. She was due to visit the country earlier this month when her visa appointment was abruptly cancelled after France suspended visa services in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, following the coup that toppled Niger's president in late July. France's Ministry of Culture also issued a directive to halt cooperation with artists from these countries, which the minister herself later retracted, saying that artists with valid visas are still able to participate in existing partnerships. But artist visas issued to Africans are usually only valid for a matter of months, and artists must apply for new visas for each tour. Like many artists and musicians from Mali who tour internationally, a large portion of Traoré's income is from these tours. She says, imagine, you had a tour planned and you didn't go. And you made plans with the money that you would receive on the tour. You thought, oh, I will do this and that. And now, she says, you don't have any money. As for me, it's been 2 months that I haven't paid my rent. France has an ongoing diplomatic falling out with Mali's military government, resulting in the expulsion of the French ambassador and the withdrawal of French troops from Mali last year. A group of European citizens living in Mali has called on the French government to lift the visa sanctions. Nicolas Bouchot is one of the spokespersons for the Citizen Collective for Europe-Mali Fraternity. The group, which coordinates largely on Facebook and WhatsApp alongside their counterparts in Burkina Faso and Niger, addressed the government in an open letter. Bouchot spoke to VOA from his home in Bamako. What we want, he says, is for the French government to use the diplomatic or political tools they have at their disposal, and not to use the Malian population to be able to achieve their objectives. Alassane Samake is the drummer in the Bamako-based musical group Sahel Roots, which gained notoriety after winning a music competition in Burkina Faso and touring in France last year. He says international tours are a way for his group to show the world the traditional music of the Sahel. Echoing the European Collective's open letter, Samake says music and culture is something that brings people together, and that the links between the countries should not be severed. He says, politics is the interest of a few, which should not be mixed with art. Art is universal, okay? He says, let us do our art, and handle your political problems separately. That's all. Tensions between France and the Sahelian juntas continue to rise, with French troops this month withdrawing from Niger, which had become the base for French troops in the region. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
A top court in the Democratic Republic of Congo threw out a suit on Monday that sought to bar opposition politician Moise Katumbi from running for president on the grounds that he is not Congolese. Katumbi is a wealthy businessman and former governor of the former Katanga province in the impoverished but mineral-rich country. The 58-year-old, whose father was Italian, is considered one of the leading contenders to challenge incumbent President Felix Tshisekedi in an election scheduled for December 20. Noel Chiani, another presidential contender, had petitioned the Constitutional Court to revoke Katumbi's candidacy, arguing that he did not possess Congolese nationality. The Constitutional Court ruled that Chiani's suit was unfounded. Katumbi's lawyer welcomed the decision, telling journalists it was judicially established that there can be no possible dispute over Moise Katumbi's Congolese nationality. And that's it for this Tuesday, October 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. each week right here on the